Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We have not yet reached the promised land that Dr. King spoke of.
I found my thrill.
It is the Savage Nation. Every day now, another member of the Congressional Black Caucus is screaming that Jim Crow is back and that members of the Tea Party want to hang blacks from trees. You've got a black president, a black attorney general, a good portion of black people in the federal government. And yet the racial strife is at a higher level than ever. Why is that? Play Fats Domino. Let me go back to another time in America.
My dream came
from. When does this ever end? When is enough enough? You have a black president, a black attorney general, a disproportionate number of people from the African-American community in the federal workforce, and they're still screaming that Jim Crow days are back. I've never seen anything like this. Then you have black Muslim representative Andre Carson, Demon Cat, Indiana, saying that the Tea Party wants blacks hanging from a tree. I could not believe this. I thought somebody was making this up. Do you know what I'm talking about here on the Savage Nation? Do you know what show you're listening to? I am talking about what's going on around you. Here is a black Muslim representative, D. Indiana, says that members of the Tea Party would love to see black people hanging from a tree. Listen to the clips. See if I'm making it up.
Some of these folks in Congress right now would love to see us as second-class citizens. Some of them in Congress right now in this Tea Party movement would love to see you and me hanging on a tree.
See, rile up the people. Are they trying to stir up a race war in America? Do you think that that's one of Axelrod's methods to get Obama reelected, which is stir up racial strife in America? Because it sure looks like it. We had Maxine Waters with her hateful rhetoric. We had this Andre Carson. We had Sheila Jackson Lee speaking in horrendous ways. We had Representative Frederica Wilson, Democrat, Florida, saying the Tea Party is the real enemy holding Congress hostage. It's getting really insane. But then again, they're in trouble, and they know it. And the Tea Party, of course, is now the whipping boy. What they don't understand is the Tea Party is America. The Tea Party is the middle class. The Tea Party are the taxpayers, not the tax takers. How many times do I have to say the same thing to you? How many times do I have to say the same thing to you? How many members of the Tea Parties are welfare recipients? I would say near zero. I would say maybe 99% or more of those in the Tea Party are business owners, taxpayers who pay enough. They don't want to pay anymore, and they want the spending cut. But this is old news already. You've heard it all. There's no point in telling you what you know, and so I won't tell you anything about it because you already heard it, and we're moving into Labor Day anyway. And yesterday, by the way, I did a whole show on something else. I don't know whether it went over well or not. I talked about comedy as opposed to pornography, and what passes for comedy is really pornography rather than comedy, and that's because most of the so-called comedians don't have the brains or the education to actually do comedy. They can't do satire. They cannot do it because it requires knowledge. It requires verbiage. Think about what Shakespeare wrote. Think about how beautiful that language was. And now take a look at the average comedian on Showtime or HBO. What passes for comedy? The F word, the B word. Every other word, F and B. We did that yesterday, so I'm not going to do it again today. And then I played a wonderful, incredible, glorious archival interview with Steve Allen, who in the year 2000 came on the show and talked about how degenerate things were you know, going, and it got much worse, of course. Now, I want to tell you something else. Are you listening? on the Savage Nation? Are you focused? Are you aware? Are you ready? Did you know that the other day the government had the nerve to redefine themselves as a family? Did you know that? Did you know that Obama has hit a new low? They're now changing the word government to family. Napolitano and Carney, that's the Carney Barker that Obama uses on television, the Carney Barker, now call it the federal family, not the federal government. Big Sis Napolitano referred to herself, well, we're coming back and we're all in a federal family. Now, we know about what newspeak is from books about propaganda, but under Obama, newspeak has taken on a new meaning. All you liberals who have forgotten your readings from high school, you are now the problem. Your party is now the party of double talk, newspeak, and racial hatred. Now, why do you think they dropped the word government? Because they know that you despise government. You understand that most people in government basically are crooks. Their pensions are higher than yours, their salaries are higher than yours, and most of them do nothing. The last family I heard about was the Sopranos. And before that, the family I heard about were the Corleones and the Godfather. But now we have a new family called the federal family. Do you feel safer now? You shouldn't. You should be terrified. Do we have the family soundbites? Play the family soundbites if you think I'm making this up.
Making sure that all resources available, all aspects of the federal family are focused on this.
The Department of Homeland Security will continue working to coordinate the federal response through FEMA, making sure that the entire federal family is working as one.
Well, we're coming in from the lanes around 2, 3 in the morning the other night, and we were trying to come up a new idea for the word government. You know, the government's not a nice, everyone's against it today. Liberals, we found out through certain groups we do down there at Bryn Mawr, wherever we got the polls done. And one of the girls in the truck came up with, well, why don't you change the word government to family? Just call it family. I said, hey, that ain't going to fly. And Roberta said, don't be stupid, Janet. Come on. Just run it up the flagpole. Try it out the next time you're up there. Just say federal family. So there it is. That's how these things work. I guess it didn't go over very well. They just tried it, and people laughed them off the stage. Well, then there's another story out there, which is they're attacking Perry because he's obviously going to win. And obviously Romney went to Texas to try to outdo Perry. The problem with it is that Perry has a history in the military and Romney doesn't. Perry's a real conservative and Romney isn't. And Romney's a career politician who attacked career politicians. So I'd rather not see them eat each other alive. I'd rather see it over quickly and Perry the front runner. And then I'd like to see a debate between the Republican candidate Perry and the communist that we have in office. And you know that we'll win unless, of course, Axelrod gets his way and there's a race war in America, insurrection, and the president gets to declare martial law. This is an extremist viewpoint, I admit. I admit. And there are days that I tend to tend towards such dire visions of the future. As far as the other candidates, forget about it. It's over. Amway calls for Bachman. Ron Paul, I hear, is taking over a chain of bake. No, come on. I love Ron Paul's ideas, but we don't want him running against Obama. He can't win. I know many of you are supporters of him. Oh, let me take your calls at 1-800-449-8255 on the Savage Nation. Oh, did you hear what's going on in South Africa? I don't think you would hear it from MSNBC. Why don't you tune in to MSNBC and see if they cover this story? It came out of the Associated Press today. Black farmers in South Africa are selling their farms back to whites because they can't make any vegetables. They can't raise wheat. A document released today shows South Africa's government is far behind land reform efforts. And so this is an explosive situation. They redistributed 30% of agricultural land to blacks. And what happened was the blacks... See, before blacks had the farms in South Africa, I know it's very embarrassing. And this is no, you know, aspersion upon the black folks of South Africa. But the white farmers of South Africa actually were able to produce sufficient food not only for South Africans, but to export. And then came fiery South African rabble-rousers who screamed that the whites are evil, and they took the land from the white farmers, and they gave it to black farmers. You'd think, well, that's perfect now. Everything is just fine. Well, what happened is The problem is that the new farmers couldn't raise enough food not only to export but to feed themselves. Now, all they had to do was look north to neighboring ex-Rhodesia, known as Zimbabwe, where the government's violent takeover of white-owned farms brought the economy of the former food exporter to its knees. You do know that, don't you, or you didn't read that in your local textbook? You see, when Zimbabwe was Rhodesia, despite the horrible racism of the evil white farmers, the people all had food and they were able to export the food on the world market. Well, then that was considered racist, so the liberals worked to make certain that locals got the land. And, of course, the locals got the land, and then they couldn't even feed themselves. Now, that's very similar to what's going on here in America with school districts and with everything else. So let's take your calls on these peaceful topics when I come back on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I've found my thrill on Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill.
Well, we're coming back from a cruise out in the Caribbean for federal workers. You know, we're exhausted by the Tea Party's really hammering us pretty hard in the spring. So I got some Justice Department grants and... We put together a cruise out in the St. Martin area, you know, for federal family only. And we're on a boat. We're trying to figure out a new way to position ourselves, you know. What a world. Whoever thought such low lives would be in such high places? Would you have ever believed in your life that such low people would be in such high places? I mean, because you know and I know that in the regular world, in the commercial world, these people would never have risen very high. It's only because the system's rigged that they are where they are. And look what they're doing. Anyone who says, wait a minute, enough is enough. Stop taxing and stop spending. They call you to every name under the sun. It's astounding, the tension in the country right now. Never been as bad since in my lifetime, I've never seen such racial enmity as under Obama, what he created. And they're stirring it up, by the way. They're stirring up the pot. They want some conflagration in this country. Because I could see that the shock troops are out there, Maxine Waters, Andre Carson. They're trying to stir up their constituents to riot, basically, in my estimation. They're making the race situation worse for everybody, in plain English. And... are you there? Is my audience? I know the lights are on, but is anyone home? No. What is today? What day of the week is today? It's the end of August already. This is already getting serious. I know the occasional times I go out of my house into a store, I see school items. So I know by that it's somewhere near September. When I see composition books and lunch pails in the supermarket, I kind of know the season. Otherwise, and it's all a blur to me. You have to send the child now back for the indoctrination, where everything is backwards. The family is no good. The white male is evil. George Washington was a racist. Everything was bad in America until Obama came along. That's what they're going to learn this year. And then they're going to learn that Staten Island is not really an island, and that Manhattan was stolen from the Indians. And if only we'd give the Indians back the Manhattan, Daryl Hannah would be able to stop the oil pipeline from Canada. No, did you hear that one? This is amazing. Here's a woman, Daryl Hannah, who was always like a goofball. She was always too tall for her own look. She was very good looking if you like the mannish type. Let's put it to you that way. If you had a thing for like gym teacher women, you know, like big bone, big teeth, Daryl Hannah was it. And not if she was not next to a male star, she was kind of pretty. But whenever they put her next to a man, it was a toss-up as to which one was the post-op trend. You know what I'm saying, TV? So now Daryl Hannah, now that her career is long over, and her derriere has fallen, you know my quotient, the lower the derriere, the LD, the higher the LQ, the liberal quotient. The LD is inversely proportionate to the LQ. And so I have found this over and over again, that as their careers die and they get older, and their derrieres start to collapse, because time and gravity does it to all of us, not just to women. Look what happens to men. But it's worse on the women who were once beautiful and movie stars. So the lower their derriere in the mirror, the higher the liberal quotient. And then they start taking on the most wacky things you've ever heard in your life. So here's Daryl Hannah being arrested at a protest outside the White House, knowing it's nothing except to get her gray hair in the news. Listen.
I'm here today to participate in civil resistance to the Keystone XL pipeline, which is going to bring this really, really destructive form of bitumen, which is raw crude, all the way through our country from Canada all the way to the Gulf of Mexico over the most sensitive water aquifers, the largest water aquifer that we have in this country, very sensitive ecosystems, and also will lock us in to being dependent on fossil fuels for generations
Morons.
To come.
Stupid girl, stupid idiot girl. Where'd you go to the High School of Performing Art, you idiot, you? You know, even your Prius needs gasoline, Schmendrick. What would she rather be dependent on, Saudi Arabian oil? You know, these people are stupid. In addition to being idiotic, they're stupid. There's one thing to be, let's say, locked into your doxy, your political doxy, and intelligent. And then there's another thing to be locked into your liberal doxy, whether it be conservative or liberal, and intelligent, or locked into your doxy, liberal or conservative, and stupid. This one is stupid. They're going to bring a certain kind of oil in from Canada all the way across sensitive lands to America. Well, what is wrong with that, Daryl? Where would you rather get the oil from, Saudi Arabia? No, that's not the issue. Did you hear the punchline? It's going to lock us into being dependent on fossil fuels. So you see, they really don't want us to have fuel at all. They want us to ride around in hydrogen cars. Now, let me tell you something. I'm all for hydrogen sun-powered cars, but every time I get into my Mercedes, I have to fill it up with high test. I don't know of a hydrogen tank yet that can make the car run. I don't understand where these people are coming from. They're 100 years out of touch with reality. 100 years out of touch. The research does not match the insanity. Do you understand this? So what am I getting excited for? What do you care for? I'm not excited. I'm just showing you what goes on in the world today. Actress Daryl Hannah arrested at a protest outside the White House. Lower the derriere. Remember what Doc Savage said to you? Lower the derriere. The LD is inversely proportionate to the LQ. The lower the derriere, the higher the liberal quotient. And you'll notice it. Look in Hollywood. The worse they look, the higher the shriek.
Savage.
We got off the cruise ship, the girls and I, and it was around 2, 3 in the morning. We were strolling down Collins Avenue over there on South Beach. We jumped into a deli, and we were talking about how to reposition the government thing. And one of them came up over the idea of the federal family. Here's an interesting article. Oscar De La Hoya admits to addictions, cheating, and suicide, considering suicide. Why do people have to tell us this? I don't understand this. I had a heroic image of Oscar De La Hoya. I liked him as a boxer. I liked the way he looked. I liked his whole persona as a Mexican-American. I thought he was a great guy. To be that good-looking and that fine a fighter and that good a businessman. Now I got to read this. Oscar De La Hoya said in a wide-ranging interview that his drinking, drugs, and womanizing all belying his golden boy image got so out of control that he considered suicide. I don't want to read this. Why do they tell us these things? Can't they? What is this about telling the world your problems? When did this suddenly become the norm? Keep it to yourself, Oscar. Let us have some image of you. Rock bottom was recently the former boxing champ told Univision. Within a couple of years, he said, I was just thinking of my life was even worth it. If I don't have the strength, I don't have the courage to take my own life, but I was thinking about it. De La Hoya said he's been going to rehab to deal with vices. He said he's been sober for 3 months after ongoing treatment and joining Alcoholics Anonymous. The Mexican-American former fighter said he was unfaithful to his wife and that they were separated for a while, but that his infidelities never reached that of a certain golfer. Now, he doesn't mean the golfer on radio. He means the golfer on golfing. He says, I was unfaithful, but not obviously a Tiger Woods level. De La Hoya retired in 2009 after a 16-year career in which he won 10 world titles in 6 divisions and became boxing's most popular fighter. De La Hoya was thoroughly beaten by Manny Pacquiao in his last fight. He won his last title in May of 2006, beating Ricardo Mayorga, blah, blah, blah. I actually saw him fight. I saw Pacquiao fight in Las Vegas. They're amazing guys, both of them. De La Hoya transcended his sport using his bilingual skills to generate crossover appeal among Latinos and whites. This is an interesting story. He began boxing at age 5, following in the path of his grandfather and father. He won an Olympic gold medal in the 1992 Barcelona Games, blah, 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 delivering on a promise to his late mother, Cecilia, who died of breast cancer 2 years earlier. Then he says, there were drugs. My drug of choice was Coke and alcohol. Coke was recent. The last 2 years, last 2.5 years, and I depended more on the alcohol than the cocaine. De La Hoya said, it took me to a place where I felt safe. It took me to a place where I felt as if nobody can say anything to me. It took me to a place where I just can reach out and grab my mom. See, it's, you know why this story is intriguing to me? I've always been fascinated by boxers for a couple of reasons. What motivates a man to fight for a living? Well, a lot of things. If you're very poor, it's the money. If you're a tough kid and a good fighter, typically people came out of the ghettos or out of the barrio and they used their fists or their brains. One or the other. Some used both. Okay, that's A. But you look at the psychology of a lot of these fighters, and as a layman looking in at it, many of them are very dramatically insecure. A lot of fighters are amongst the most insecure men on the planet. They're like little boys inside who are terrified of the world, and the more terrified they are, the better the fighter they are because they're fighting for their lives. Do you understand that or not? Does that make sense to you? I remember when I was a kid, there was a fighter, a couple of gay fighters. They were so good. They were so tough. But you, even as a kid, you knew that they were homosexual. But you knew they were tough and great fighters. And they were fighting because of their insecurities and their fears. And they didn't want people to call them names. But they were also very good fighters. And I always found that to be fascinating. But this is neither here nor there. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's a little more interesting to me than just, you know, GOP, the Democrats. I thought that was an interesting commentary. What else do you want to talk about? Let's go to Iowa. Let's go to the heart of the heartland and go to Dennis. Dennis, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to your new fiction book, Abuse of Power, coming out on September 13th. And after I read it, I plan to donate my copy to one of the public branch libraries so more people can read it too.
Well, you know what? Then I'm sending you a free copy because you got on today with it. You know, and Dennis, I'm not going to be reading from the book until the week of the, maybe next week I'm actually going to start after Labor Day. But you stay in the line, you'll get a free copy of Abuse of Power. It's an amazing novel. I'm so proud of it. I can't wait to see the movie. It's the one thing I can't wait to see is the movie. Would you believe it? I know many of you don't even read anymore, but does anyone out there still read a novel? I think I asked this 2 weeks ago. By all estimation, conservatives are more literate than liberals. That's what I've read. And the education level is higher. Liberals think that they're the educated ones. But by what I have seen, the number of people on welfare who identify as Democrats, many of them are illiterate or illiterate. They don't read. That's not cool on that one. Canadian oil, government family, Obama, Chicago politics. All right, Greg in Chicago, you got my attention. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hey, Michael. Obama learned his family, the federal family here in Chicago. Just in the past week here, we've had our tolls go up 87%. In the past couple of weeks, we got a guy getting a former chief of detectives in Chicago Police getting out. Chicago Police is $150 million short. They're like 2,000 officers short. The new public schools chief who came here from New York is now saying that Ernie Duncan, one of Daley's dunces, basically screwed up everything and underfunded schools, and they got money coming out their ears. It's like we got a dropout rate like it's going out of style around here. I mean,
well, but they could all go to work for Obama as refrigerator inspectors and come into everyone's house to see if you have an extra refrigerator in the garage. Exactly. They can give them a green uniform and hire them. That's what Maxine Waters would want, to deputize the Black Panthers. I was watching a thing on mobsters last night on one of the channels, and it was about Al Capone. I think I saw it before in 09. I don't know if you ever saw it on one of the history channels. And I was amazed that when Capone was finally nailed on income tax evasion, he had tried to bribe the jurors and couldn't. Then he tried to have the judge killed, and they were interviewing the judge's son. We're talking 70 years later. The guy's an old man himself. He said, the judge of the trial, they try to kill him, Capone. Try to kill the judge. They'd have police around them all the time. So I said to myself, is Chicago still like this? Greg, is it still? It isn't that bad, is it?
Well, I mean, it may not be that bad out in the street, so to speak, but yeah, it is. I mean, we've got a bunch of guys here who, for instance, this guy Blagojevich, this guy Kelly, who had, started up a roofing company.
Who's a goy? Who'd you say is a goy?
No, it's a Blagojevich, one of his guys.
Oh, the goy. Oh, a Blagojevich, I'm sorry.
And, you know, I mean, these guys, all of a sudden, all these guys who are about to get indicted or they got to, you know, go rant out somebody else to save their own skin, or they have the capability of doing so, you know, suddenly they're all committing suicide, you know. One guy gets...
They are? They're taking the gas?
So forth.
They're taking the gas at the last minute to avoid ratting out people because they know their families will go if they do, right?
Right. That and you know, you hear people talking...
Well, you got to hand it to the Chicago mob. I got to tell you, they're brilliant in terms of having cultivated Obama. They got the perfect poster boy to have engineered the White House takeover, didn't they? I mean, come on. This is like Arnold Rothstein fixed the World Series of 1919. This was amazing. I mean, they knew exactly who to pick and how. Because Obama's policies are no different than that of Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton. It's just that he has a different appeal. You know what I'm saying? But basically, he's the same person.
Yeah. People do not understand how politics in this city, it's door-to-door, it's knock on doors, it's take names, it's kick butt, it's all that stuff. And thuggery...
Well, in the 1920s, I understand they used to give out $5 bottle of pints of cherry brandy to the poor in Chicago to have them to vote in the elections. And now they give them, I don't know what, food stamps?
Breakfast, what's lunch, that? You know, whatever it takes. You know, we had Joey the Clown Lombardo, who went to prison, is going to be there for the rest of his life, who said in his testimony at his trial that when it came to the city politics, all aldermen in this city run their ward like a fiefdom. And to get anything done, legal or illegal, you got to go to the alderman and you got to pay your price. And
how different is that than New York City or San Francisco, which is perhaps the most corrupt city in the United States of America and one of the least known for corruption? San Francisco is as corrupt as they come, which is why it's liberal. I don't think people understand that corruption and liberalism go hand in hand. Because a conservative generally cracks down on corruption, while a liberal deflects people with so-called crappy social issues that no one really cares about. And they make you think about the social issues while they're robbing the treasury blind. It's an old game. It's like a combination. It's like Playboy. Playboy had a formula where they would show TNA, okay? And then in order to make you feel not guilty looking at the naked girls, they would run an interview with like a pseudo-intellectual who just wrote a book.
Hey, Michael, one quick thing. We got a guy, Daley, our former mayor, Rahm Emanuel, is going to pay off. Back when Daley, before he got elected mayor, was the state's attorney, and people were being on the south side, you know, guys.
This is too complicated for me. How's Rahm Emanuel doing as a mayor?
Well, I'd say good and bad. And the bad part about it is nothing's changed. The guy has changed. Some things have changed, but you know what?
Did he grow up in Chicago? Was he there as a young man?
Yeah, relatively speaking, yeah, because he worked with...
So he's more of a Chicagoan than Hillary Clinton was from Chappaquiddick.
Pardon me?
I mean, he was more from Chicago than Hillary Clinton was from New York State.
Way more.
She was a carpetbagger. She moved in and ran in the district simply to run, but she wasn't from New York.
No.
Yeah. All right. By the way, what station are you listening to me on in Chicago? Do you know?
WIND.
Yeah. Oh, Friday. Good. That's good. The great station. The Windy City. Wind in the Windy City. That's terrible. Wind. Wind in the Windy City. Wind in the... what else? Petraeus fades away. How do you like... I can't do that story. Housewives to air with suicide prevention. Housewives to air with suicide prevention alerts. Oh, God. Whoa, cynicism. Please. They must be kidding. What else is going on? It's getting bad. I'm reading the Drudge Report on air. I said I would never do that. I better go to my own website. Let's see what's on my website. I didn't even pay any attention. I put one article up today. Let me read my headline here. Top right. Black Muslim rep says Tea Party wants blacks hanging from a tree. Now, the reason I led with Black Muslim rep is because he's a black Muslim and he's a congressman. You had to read the entire story by the Associated Press to find out that he's a Muslim. And what's even more interesting is that he's on the Homeland Security Committee. Isn't that wonderful? And he said that the greatest threats to America are white men in the conservative movement. See, isn't that great living in the world is upside down. Here is a black Muslim who says Tea Party wants blacks hanging from a tree. And this is the same man who was on the Homeland Security Committee advising Janet Napolitano, who says that one of the largest threats to our internal security are not Islamics, but racial supremacist groups, white racists. Do we have that on sound? I think we do. Is it any good to sound clip 24? Yes. Let's hear it.
Do you think the people outside are generally dangerous? Or?
Well, absolutely. I worked in Homeland Security. I come from intelligence, and I'll tell you, one of the largest threats to our internal security, I mean, terrorism has, in Islamic faith, really comes from racial supremacists.
I can't hear it. It's bad sound. But terrorism really comes from racial supremacist groups. And so that's where Napolitano gets it from. He's an advisor to Napolitano, a black Muslim. It's astounding to me that we have such an upside-down world. Then there was the Muslims brawling with police at the Playland in Rye, New York. Everyone's told they can't wear headgear, including a baseball hat. But as you well know, in Animal Farm, some animals are more equal than others. And in this case, they don't want to wear their headscarves. They want to wear their headscarves on rides, where if the scarf gets caught in a ride, then they could sue the amusement park. So the guy said, take your headscarf off. And they said, oh, no. Then the next thing you know, there's a riot already. And they blame the police. Isn't it wonderful? It used to be when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Now it's when in Rome, tell the Romans to drop dead. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So here's the latest on Mel Gibson. He agrees to pay his, what you like, I got to be pleasant in what I call her. I once used the words that I shouldn't use. I mean, I shouldn't call the woman that he had a dalliance with a gold digger, the Russian gold digger. She's a musician now. Every reference to the gold digger is musician. Mel Gibson agrees to pay baby mama $750,000. Now, what's interesting about this is that the settlement terms are amazingly low. Listen to this. Last year, the gold digger, I mean the musician girl from Russia, turned down a $15 million settlement package that Mel Gibson's lawyers had offered her, right? Now she settles for $750,000 in three installments, $250,000 today, the next payment in 2013, and the final installment in January 2016. It sounds like an Obama, you know, budget. So that's like next to nothing. So you have to ask yourself, how did Gibson's lawyers go from offering the gold digger, I mean the musician, pardon me, $15 million last year, and now this year she settles for $750,000? You only can come to one conclusion. The conclusion is that Gibson's lawyers discovered some dirt on the gold digger, I mean on the musician, pardon me, and they settled as quickly as they could so the musician, I mean the gold digger, or the golden musician, could get back to her musical career. What an amazing story. I'd like to know who his lawyers are. Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Peter Lichtman announced terms of the settlement at a hearing attended by both the Oscar winner and Russian musician Oksana Grigorieva. So that's the story. From $15 million she could have had a year ago? And her lawyers? What geniuses those lawyers must be. Who are her lawyers? Who was the musician's lawyers? Can anyone look that up for me? I'd like to know who the lawyers were for the gold digger and who Gibson's lawyers were. I'd like to know his lawyers' names. I'd like to give him a ring. Maybe they could represent me in England. What a payout schedule. $250,000 today and $250,000 to the gold digger, I mean the lawyer, the singer in 2013. And then another $250,000 in 2016. That's absolutely like Obama saying the budget's going to be balanced in three payments. All right, that's when nowhere fought. They're gone, finished, nothing, no one cares. I could see they're already gone for the weekend. You could tell there's a certain... No one's on the radio anymore. The golfer's golfing, the wall banger's banging. I'm the last one standing on radio. What else is... SUNY college student found dead in a room. Let's see what that is. Okay. Another one? Why all these kids commit suicides? The drugs. College official says a 21-year-old student was found dead in their campus townhouse at the State University of New York at Delhi. That's sad in a way. You know, autopsy performed to determine a blah, blah, blah. Transfer student from Glenmont who was studying veterinary science technology. What is veterinary science technology? It's like a vet's assistant. It's like a pet trainer. But, all right, it's sad. These kids, they go to college and they commit a lot of very high suicide right now. It's mainly from a life of drugs. Ritalin is a youth. Then they go from Ritalin on to... antidepressants. From antidepressants, they get to college. They don't know what they're doing. and they take diversity training and they sleep with their sorority sister. The next thing you know, they're throwing themselves off a balcony. It's a terrible situation. Father alleged for punching daughter. What garbage in the media now since AOL took over the news with that hag from Greece, whatever her name is. You turn on AOL, you get hit in the head. I mean, I got to break AOL as a... Look at her being marched there with the grass. She looks horrible. Daryl Hannah. Boy, does she look bad. Can't she just have disappeared and never be seen again? She looks horrendous. I mean, there was a woman, as I said, remember, wasn't she in a movie, Dollhouse? Look what happens to them as time goes on. I'm glad I wasn't born a woman, because the aging for a woman is horrible compared to a man. Really, I mean, really, we all know that. It's a terrible thing what happens to women, and they suffer from it much worse than we do. I mean, between Viagra and hair transplants, a guy today, no matter who he is, if he's got a little, you know, drive left in him, he can at 80, he can still be a 55-year-old and get away with it. Who's this creep? I'm looking at celebrity photos. George Clooney? Look at him. Look how bad he looks from a bad lifestyle. I find myself looking at celebrity photos lately in the New York Post. There's a certain perverse reality in looking at celebrity photos because you realize at the end of the day they're just like you and I, only they suffer more than we do because they think everybody loves them. And then when they find out nobody really loves them and they only want them for their money, well, you know the rest of that story. Oh, don't tell me about the Kardashians, two of the ugliest women that God has ever made on the earth. I don't know who they are even. I don't even know why I'm reading about these fat chazas. Every time I open a newspaper, another fat chaza with it. I never saw anything like this. These girls were not good-looking when they were young. And yet, who are their publicists? I don't even know who they are or what they've done, but I see them in the newspaper all the time. I can guarantee you the Leprechaun has them on the show as often as possible. That I can guarantee you.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. Why are you so glum out there? Why are you so perplexed? The world is, you know, the best of times. It was the worst of times. Right? I mean, that's what we're living through. Dickens wrote about it. There's really no difference. You know, it was a time of plenty and a time of not plenty. So there's nothing really different. I mean, most Americans can still go around without arms. There's relative peace and calm in the country, despite the race baiters that you're hearing now and again, like Representative Andre Carson, who says that here's a guy, a black Muslim representative from Indiana, telling the Washington Times reporter that the Tea Party protesters are one of the largest threats to our internal security. This man is sitting in Congress. President's uncle benefits from 1980s Dukakis fake ID policy for illegals. And such. I mean, we're going through, you know, a lot of cultural war. A warfare, and we're losing. Those of us who believe in family values have lost. They won. The degenerates have won. There's no question about it. So, you know, just give up. When you lose a war, you go on. Run your own life the best you can and avoid the degenerates. Choose your battles, but don't eat your heart out over it. And then, you know, there's a big story that no one's covering. And I came up finally today. I don't know who finally put the pressure on him. I found the story. I was quite surprised. The largest number of Navy SEALs who ever died in any one incident died under Obama a few weeks ago. He or somebody who reports directly to the commander in grief put all of these Navy SEALs on a slow-turning, slow-flying, antiquated Chinook helicopter and flew them in as support troops for an Army Ranger unit that was in trouble. Now, I've never heard of Navy SEALs used in a support mission, incidentally. Maybe they are, but they're not trained for that. Navy SEALs are reserved for different missions than that. Now, for this commander-in-chief to have wasted so many valuable lives and to not have indicted anyone yet for having put them on a Chinook helicopter is all the more astonishing today, because some higher up inside the military has come out. I forget his name. There's a picture of him somewhere on my website. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure he's a good guy and a tough guy, but he's a bureaucrat at the end of the day. The article's gone already. I saw it earlier. I don't know where it went. Here, Admiral defends use of SEALs in calamitous raid. That's as far as the New York Times will go. The new commander of American Special Ops has defended the use of commandos in a Navy SEALs unit to back up a raid. You got to read the whole story to remember what happened. Obama was commander-in-chief when all of these Navy SEALs died. 17 members of the SEALs died in one crash. 5 members of a Naval Special Warfare unit died. 3 members of an Air Force Special Ops unit. 5 members of an Army helicopter crew. 7 Afghan commandos all put onto a slow-turning flying bus. And nobody is copping to who put them on the Chinook helicopter. Nobody. If I were in Congress, I wouldn't rest. I'd hold 24/7 hearings until I found out who put them on that Chinook helicopter, and I would try them for homicide. Because whoever did this to them killed them. You say, well, wait a minute now. That can't be true. A Chinook is a wonderful helicopter. Then how come was it shot? How come it was shot down with an RPG? How is that possible? How could Admiral McRaven support this? There's only one reason he's supporting it. It's because he works for Obama, and he's been told to dummy up, shut his mouth, and support the commander in grief. I don't want to talk about it. I just don't want to talk about it because you're going to eat your heart out. The men are dead. More Special Forces guys, more SEALs rather dead in one day than ever in their history under Obama, and nobody says a word about it. Nobody investigates who put the elite Navy SEALs on this Chinook helicopter. Who are these guys that then get away with killing their brothers in arms like this without paying the price for it? And then we were talking about Mel Gibson. She settles for $750,000, and last year she was offered $15 million. I wanted to know who Gibson's lawyers are, and moreover, I'd like to know who the doofuses are who represented the so-called Russian singer. JD in Las Vegas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, finally, after 4 years, I have the privilege of speaking with you. I love your stories. I'm an old New Jersey guy who went into New York every day in the 60s and 70s. I love your stories growing up, but I would look for who the private eyes were, the private investigators of this. And by the way, I loved your book, Savage Nation. And
thank
who
you.
The private investigators were for these lawyers, because these are the guys that dug up the dirt.
But wouldn't you conclude that if they were offered $15 million last year and they turned it down because being greedy lawyers, they figured they could squeeze more out of Mel Gibson, then a year later they settled for $750,000? Doesn't that tell us that they found something on her?
Well, I, when you were saying that, that was my first thought. The private investigators found out something on her, and that's why all of a sudden she had no case, and they just threw her $750,000. That was just a bone.
Yeah, payable over 3 or 4 years. That means the greedy lawyers, what are they in it for, a third or something like that? So that the most the thieves get is $250,000 out of it. That's not a lot of money for lawyers.
Her lawyers get the $250,000, but Gibson's lawyers probably got a lot more.
Well, of course it cost him a lot more to fight her, and there's no question about it. But he was facing, first he was facing jail, then he was facing at least, he offered $15 million. Now he settles for $750. So I'd like to know what they found out about the Russian songstress.
I tried to call you about a year and a half ago. You asked for all the headlights to go on if they agreed with you. And I was driving that time in Las Vegas. And I swear to God, Dr. Savage, over half the headlights went on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon as I was driving around.
Yeah, there. I love Las Vegas. I don't go there anymore. I had an apartment there for a while. I go there. I used to eat an Italian restaurant down the street that I like, where they arrested those two New York homicide cops who were working for the mob. Very colorful city.
Which would that be the... son of a gun, I can't think of the name.
You know, you remember those guys? They were retired NYPD detectives, but they were on the payroll of the gangs in New York, and they were actually doing hits for the mob. And they arrested them in their jumpsuits in Las Vegas in that restaurant. In the restaurant, they took them out of the restaurant in their jumpsuits.
The two New York cops, yeah, the one wrote a play, tried to get a TV movie, and the other guy...
There you go, right. Really upstanding, wonderful people. They give all police such a good name. They're like the liberal poster... They're poster boys for liberals' hatred for police. J.D., what's the climate? I don't mean, temperature-wise. The housing is horrible in Vegas now, right?
I've lived here for 40 years, Doctor, and this is the worst I've ever seen it. We have more illegal aliens doing all kinds of stuff. We are the highest in bankruptcies, the highest in foreclosures, the highest in unemployment. They say it's 14%, but our state, our senator, Whorehouse Harry Reid, says, oh, it's not that high. We probably are about 22% in unemployment. I've been coming to this town since 66, moved here in 77. I have never seen it so bad.
How do you take the heat in the summer in Las Vegas? How do you deal with it?
You don't go outside.
You just stay in air conditioning, that's it?
July, August, and September, you get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. You get your business and things done by 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, and then you don't go out until 7:30, 8 o'clock at night when the sun goes down.
It sounds like Miami in August. I mean, I can't even take Florida in the summer.
I was in Myrtle Beach last year in July. It was 97 degrees with 90-some humidity. The saving grace, you've been out here. We don't have humidity.
You don't have an ocean. You can't jump in the ocean. But I went to Florida like 2 weeks ago. It was like sticking my head in a pizza oven when I came out of the house. I felt as though I was back as a kid in a bagel bakery. It was so hot, I couldn't take it. And then I went in the ocean. It was full of jellyfish. I couldn't even swim. Hey, J.D., I'm going to tell you, J.D., I'm going to send you a copy of Abuse of Power. Stay on the line. You're going to get a free copy to read around Vegas, start the ball rolling, and stuff like that. We got wonderful callers. We got people listening from around the country, mainly men, truthfully. It's not a woman's show. This is not a... I mean, there are maybe 13, 14 women members of the Savage Nation across the country, admittedly. It's mainly grouchy old white males, maybe... 200-300 white males across America listen to me. No one else does. Now, allegedly, it's the third largest radio show in America with 10 million people. But if you were to listen to the Congressional Black Caucus, it's probably 300 white crackers who want to hang people from trees. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So this December will mark 2 years that I had a private dinner with Mitt Romney in North Beach, in the North Beach restaurant. At that time, he was still willing to meet with me. And I remember it very well because I went home that night. I was so excited that I bit into a piece of Italian bread and broke a tooth. I had a tooth transplant in the front of the teeth, the front of the mouth. I got so worked up, bing, I snapped the pin. It's been 2 years that I've been suffering with this tooth implant. So I went to the dentist the other day again. This was supposed to be the final, where the custom tooth went in. I told you the joke. It's no joke. He did a bone transplant. I don't know where the bone came from. I told him I didn't want a cadaver bone. He put a cadaver bone in. I said, make sure it's plastic. It wasn't. It was a cadaver. Now, I know it's supposed to be innocuous and they kill all of the DNA in it. But my luck, it's a communist transvestites. Jawbone that they put in. I have no idea who they put in. You know, sometimes I wake up with weird feelings now from the bone he put in. But all kidding aside, so this was supposed to be the final. Before I went to Florida, he put in a temporary tooth. I had nothing but pain for 2 weeks. So the guy says to me when he took out the temp the other day, oh, I put a little bit of extra glue in on the top. That's irritating you. I said, Jesus. I said, that's 2 weeks of pain there with the glue. You know, don't worry, we're putting in the permanent. I'm not making up what I'm about to tell you. I go in again. This is the final, where they take out the temp. They take and they put in the gold pin and the final tooth custom made. The guy says, uh-oh, it doesn't look right. I took a look in the mirror. I look like Jerry Lewis in that movie where, like, he has weird teeth. I swear to you, the tooth was like a fang sticking out the wrong way. I said, what is this? He said, they made it wrong in the laboratory. I'm not making this up. So he had to take the tooth out again and make another temporary tooth and stick it back in my head. So tomorrow I'm going to another specialist who says, don't worry about it. He didn't do it. So he said, this could happen to anyone. I said, everything he's done is wrong. So for every stage for 2 years now, from the first to the last, has been wrong. I mean, one mistake, two. This is one after the other. So the specialist says to me, don't worry, he's a very good dentist. Okay, great. You should have seen the fangs sticking out of my head. I swear to you. I wish I had a picture of it. I said, how does a laboratory make an error like this? I have a feeling they know who I am. I mean, I wish they used an alias instead of my name. They had to send it to, what if it's like a liberal in a dental lab who made like the tooth stick out? What, oh, please, I don't even want to start thinking about that. You know, besides the way they made the tooth. So that's tomorrow, yet another dentist. I am so sick and tired of laying in that chair. I don't want to go anymore. I could see why in the old days, people just live without teeth. You just ate mush later on in your years, you know what I mean? But I look how good my voice is. That's the only thing I care about, is it didn't affect the diphthong. No, the way the tongue strikes the mouth is amazing, how adaptable we are. You know what I mean? This is with a transvestite bone in my mouth. I can... Everything is still perfect. The voice didn't change. Now, I'm afraid, though, what if the final tooth is made for like another cadaver and I start speaking in a high voice? I'm finished altogether. It could kill me. It could just kill my living. You got to laugh at things. At the end of the day, you just got to wake up and laugh at it all. That's all there is to it. What are you going to do? You know, you don't get out of this life alive one way or the other. You know, look at your dog. Look at my poor little dog. He's with me every day. He's only 7, but how did the years fly by so fast? Their shelf life is so short. It's so heartbreaking. Every time I look at him, all I can think of is he's going to die sooner than I want him to. It's horrible. I really have a terrible view of that. It's awful. I'm starting to sound like that woman in Queens who went crazy, where she started crying to everyone in the street saying, why are we born to die? Oh, that was horrible. Remember I told you that story of the doctor's wife? Everybody, she stopped in the street with tears in her eyes. Why are we born when we're only going to die? No one knew what to do. It was like, oh. You know, she was known as crazy. I mean, the woman was seeing things. She was really a Buddhist. In her days, she was an early Buddhist. The wheel. She saw the wheel. Today, she would have converted to Buddhism, probably, and gone to an ashram. Buddhists don't have ashrams, do they? They have restaurants in the Geary district. Nobody. No disrespect meant to the Buddhist religion. It's a beautiful religion. It's very philosophically interesting. I myself am not a Buddhist. I like the poetry. I'm not into the whole thing with the fat guy and, you know, sitting and worshiping an idol. It just doesn't do anything for me. You know, and there's something about worshiping a fat man that doesn't do it. Not in this day and age, truthfully. And that's another thing when you think about, how could so many people obsessed with their bodies in Hollywood, all these liberal elites, be Buddhists? When basically they're worshiping a big fat guy who should go on a diet. I mean, what kind of diet could that guy have had? That fat stomach with the beads on his pectorals. You know what I mean? New York, WOR, Brian, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Mike, it sounds a little fishy. Maybe the Manchurian president...
Wait. What sounds fishy? The tooth?
No. The tooth sounds fine. I was talking about the helicopter that went down.
Oh, yeah. No, they put those seals on that Chinook. Somebody wanted it. Somebody did this on purpose.
They were the ones who took out Osama bin Laden. Maybe
they weren't, allegedly they were in the same unit, but they weren't the ones. I believe they were set up, and they were set up to die, yes.
Yep, I'm with you.
And I'll go a step further. I will say that somebody in the Afghan military gave them up, and also somebody in the military put them on one helicopter and made them a juicy target in order to give the enemy some payback. I think somebody set them up for a whacking.
Exactly what I said. That's,
I'll tell you that right now. I don't like the smell of it. And now a word from a very important sponsor of mine, and I've told you about them because I've told you wisdom is all. And as you get older, you focus more on your wisdom and the legacy you're going to leave your children and grandchildren. And in order to share your wisdom and experience with your kids and your grandkids, because it's one of the greatest things, well, you got to do it. But if you suffer from hearing loss, what happens? The gift can be lost. So to leave this legacy of your wisdom and your knowledge, it requires two-way communication that's effective. Well, there's a new medical breakthrough for those with hearing loss. It's not a hearing aid. It's called the Esteem Hearing Implant. This revolutionary solution is 100% invisible, so you can keep up your active lifestyle. The Esteem Hearing Implant delivers a natural improvement to your hearing with a natural clarity of sound. And to learn more about this breakthrough and give your children a legacy they will cherish for a lifetime, All you got to do is call 1-800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. Do you got it? Did you hear me? That's 800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. Do it today, will you please? Call 1-800-953-5453 or look up envoymedical.com. For a list of side effects and benefits associated with esteem, visit envoymedical.com. So this is the Savage Nation. We're going to come back in a minute. We're going to talk about all of the breaking news of the day. We're going to talk about conspiracies and non-conspiracies. And I want your calls at 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
All right, welcome back to the Savage Nation. You know, last week I made an analysis that's, I think it was wrong. I said that, is Michelle Obama, I asked the question, the Imelda Marcos of our time? And I realized it wasn't correct because the shoe thing doesn't match. And if the shoe doesn't fit, you got to acquit. In other words, she doesn't have a shoe fetish. Yes, she has the royalist tendencies. Yes, she's spending like crazy. Yes, they allege she spent $10 million on travel last year alone. But the shoe thing didn't fit. So last night I woke up 3 in the morning and I said, bingo, wait a minute. Michelle Obama, the comparison should not be to Imelda Marcos. I said, Michelle Obama is the Teresa Hines Kerry of our time. Now, why do I say that? Do you remember when, God forbid, Kerry was running for the presidency? And every time he gained traction, his wife, Mrs. Hines, would open her mouth in that strange, like, Dr. Mrs. Strangelove voice. Mrs. Hines, the ketchup woman that he got the fortune from. And every time she talked, his ratings went in the toilet. I believe that's why you haven't heard a word from Michelle Obama recently. I think they realize that she is a liability to him, no matter what the liars in the media say. And they're pushing her in the background. Do we have any Teresa Hines carry a soundbite? Almost, yes, no. Because she spooked me. Remember that one? Well, we'll play it for you eventually. Do you agree with me that Michelle Obama is sort of the Teresa Hines Carey of our time, and they're not going to let her. They're not going to let her be seen for a while. I really don't think. I think that they're going to basically stop it because she's not playing. That's like the federal family. That's like using the federal family, you know, as a moniker for a federal government. All right, whatever. Tucson, Arizona. Diane, welcome to the Savage Nation from Tucson.
Hello, Mr. Savage. I have tried for 2 years to get on your show. I just think you are the best ever. And I just want to tell you that I listen to you. I'm a woman. I have a lot of female friends that just love your show. I really do. And we listen to you faithfully. I listen to you every afternoon.
Isn't that something? I heard that there were 13 to 16 women who listened to the show across the country.
No, that's not well. I'm
joking. No, every time I say that, I get women to call me. They want to be known that the Savagettes are alive and well. I actually heard that there are groups of women who get together in houses and turn the radio on and have a whole little, like, glass of wine around the show.
Well, definitely. But I want to tell you, I totally related to you with your dental story with the implant. I had the moron of moron periodontist do mine, and I had an infection so bad he wouldn't.
Oh, please! I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear an infection.
All right.
I don't even want to give it a thought because I tell you, I've been this nightmare that he put in when I heard cadaver bone after it was over last year, I almost died. I said I wanted a plastic bone put in, not a cadaver bone. I don't know who the cadaver was. My luck, it was an alky liberal somewhere from Seattle that they found.
I was told that the bone I was going to get was going to be from a cow.
Oh, well, that's kind of that's very cheerful turn into something more bovine. Can you select
the
animal you're going to get the bone from? Is that the latest in dentistry? Can you pick your animal? Can you go to the butcher shop? Can you go to the farm? Can you say, I want that cow's jawbone put into my head? Thanks, Diane. No, you got to laugh at the end of the day. We're all, you know, we have a shelf life, all of us. Things break, they fall out. And, you know, the older you get, the more things fall out. I feel like an older Jaguar where the parts used to fall off as you drove it. Hey, we used to have a joke in Queens when I was a kid. we're all Anglophiles as kind of immigrant kids. You know, we looked up to the British. We thought that they were cool. Little did we know what was underneath that that false aplomb of David Niven. Had we only known, my God, we wouldn't have aped the British. So anyway, we bought British cars and we bought the Harris tweed jackets. Everyone tried to be an English gentleman, you know. So the best we could do was buy like broken old Jaguars. But the joke was is that, yes, I bought a Jaguar and it has a net behind it, which catches the parts as they fall off. Not today. There's a different company. It's owned by the Indians. And I'm sure it's a better car. Why? They changed the looks on it, though. It has no look anymore. I'm sure it's a better car, but it looks like a Toyota. But that's neither here nor there. I don't want to do cars. You want to do cars? You want to talk cars? Oh, you have Teresa Hines Carey ready. Okay, let's hear her.
My name is Teresa Hines Carey.
That was it for him.
And by now, I hope it will come as no surprise that I have something to say.
Oh, boy. Those are the Democrats in the background, the welfare recipients. Is that the whole thing? Come on, guys. Can you cut out the cheerings?
Tonight.
Here we go.
As I have done throughout this campaign, I would like to speak to you from the heart.
What is this, like catatonia?
Y a todos los hispanos, los latinos...
Oh, that really helped carry a lot. That really brought in the Tea Party. Oh, and that brought in the 10 French voters in his district.
A tutti gli italiani.
Oh, yeah, the 15 Italians from federal protection.
A toda la familia portuguesa.
And the Brazilian pizza makers in Massachusetts right there.
And... to all the continental Africans living in this country. Oh,
that was the line. I remember. Wait, and all the continental Africans. Nobody knew what she was talking about. Nobody. She was showing off how educated she was. She went to prep schools and this school and that school. It's wonderful if you can speak that many languages, but what was she actually saying? Nothing. She was showing off. All of that based on ketchup. I love ketchup, by the way, myself. And nothing against ketchup. Don't get me wrong. I think we use Heinz. I'm not really sure which one we get. It's the big fat. I don't like the new bottles, frankly. It's very depressing. I grew up on a thin ketchup bottle of glass. It was ketchup. That was. Now they made it like a fat squat bottle. You have to squeeze it. That sound that comes out of it is disgusting. It's almost pornographic. I don't like that sound. That's like a mustard thing. But you know that ketchup is a health food. You don't know that, even though it's got sugar in it. The intensity of lycopenes in ketchup is actually helpful. I know you're not supposed to believe that, but it's like tomato sauce is great for you. Spaghetti sauce is good for you. Pizza sauce is good for you. Ketchup's a very healthful food. A little high in sugar, but hey, look. You got to get your lycopene where you got to get your lycopene. 1-800-449-8255 is my phone number, as you know. And now what do you want to talk about? My eyes are going on me next. Sacramento, Patty, welcome to the program. What's up?
Yeah, hi, Michael. How you doing?
Well, good.
I just wanted to let you know that you've got to be wrong on that percentage of women listeners. You have to be.
Why?
Because I've been listening to you for years, and actually I have other friends that I got to listen to you. Some people wouldn't listen to you in the beginning. They thought you were radical and refused and thought I was nuts. And I even have my grandchildren listening to you now.
Well, A, I am radical, yes, and they're nuts. I may be radical, but they're nuts if they don't understand what's going on around them. But I know, Patty, I do understand that a lot of women love the show because I'm sort of the missing link in their lives. I'm the talkative husband that doesn't talk. In other words, I'm the husband that doesn't talk anymore or never did. Or what do I represent to you? Other than you enjoy the show, but is there a figure that I represent in your mind?
I think if I had anything, I'd probably have to say father, teacher, something like that. Because
all right, the old father figure thing, the authority figure that is no longer around.
And teacher,
And teacher. Well, I am a teacher by training. I've always been a social worker teacher. I really haven't changed very much. But remember this, at the end of the day, Patty, it's one man's opinion. That's really what it comes down to. I try to base it on, you know, my observations based on fact, but it's one man's opinion. May I send you a copy of my new novel, Abuse of Power? I'm going to send it whether you want it or not.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
Stay on the line, Patty. I know you'll enjoy it. You can be the only one in the crowd to have it. Be the first in your family, in the federal family, to have a copy of Abuse of Power. I think everyone in the government should be required to read Abuse of Power because they'll have a new view of Michael Savage. I think that even, I almost said Pat Nixon, but I meant Mrs. Bush. What was her name? Mrs. I think Laura Bush should read Abuse of Power because she's so into librarian things. You know, maybe she'd finally read one of my 27 books. Well, now here we go. New York, WOR, Gene, go ahead, please. Oh, I hit the wrong button. Give me 6, not 5. Or whatever. Gene, go ahead, please.
Michael, I sympathize with you. I have the same problem with my implant. It's been 2 years of hell. It's
yeah.
It's a front tooth.
Unbelievable.
I don't know. Do you have a flipper?
No. But I want to know this. When he did the final, did your tooth look like a Jerry Lewis sticking out sideways?
Well,
I swear to you, Gene, Monday was supposed to be the end of the road. Look, the implant went well. It's been x-rayed. It's solid as a rock. Apparently, the alcoholic transvestites bone took well in my body, and it's now part of me. So that's not the problem. But the stem that they attach, or the base, the crown, whatever, the guy made it in the laboratory. It stuck out like a Jerry Lewis tooth.
I've had the laboratory. They had to return the tooth, redo it. But the worst.
Right, they had to return the tooth. The guy says to me, they'll remake the stem. I said, are you crazy? They're going to use the same piece of gold? I want a new one. He said, no, don't worry. They'll refashion it. I said, what are you trying to save money on me?
If I worked like my dentist, I would be out of business.
Well, Gene, I'll tell you this. If I had to do it over again, I'd never do another implant. Never.
Yeah, but I had no choice because I had a...
Neither do I. It was a front tooth that broke from all the bones I ate over the years.
Well, how come you don't have a flipper, the prosthetic device?
I don't know. What a flipper sounds like a porpoise.
No, it's a prosthetic device. So
please. Prosthetic sounds already like an old man limping around with his Schmendrick removed.
Like a bridge. They stick it in there. So what would happen? I would put this device... I do a lot of...
No, that's too graphic already for the audience. But let me ask you something, Gene. Why the front tooth went over the years? Because I was a bone eater. I would suck marrow out of big bones in restaurants, and people would look at me like I was an animal. I mean, I love that. I love bones. I haven't eaten them for years. I didn't do it for shock value. If I ordered, for example, if I ordered a osso buco at a restaurant, which I don't eat much anymore anyway, but I'd love to suck the marrow out of a bone.
Well,
no more. Those days are over. I mean, like if a dog eats it, I should eat it.
It's been a nightmare. What's worse is I look like I come from West Virginia, and
I swear to God, I felt like Deliverance in the mirror. I looked in the mirror, I picked up the gum, I picked up the lip, I looked like Deliverance.
Well, that's what it is. And I start lisping, and my clients think I went gay. My wife is in Florida.
You didn't. You started to lisp?
I lisp.
Wait a minute. So where did they get you? What was your cadaver bone? What was the cadaver they used for you?
I have no idea.
You see, that's the problem. You see, they're not telling us where the cadavers come from. I mean, if they come from San Francisco, we're all done in.
And they say,
hey, maybe this is a giant conspiracy to use cadavers from San Francisco in order to diversify America.
Well, I want to know what your secret is because you're on the radio and you don't lisp.
No, I don't. Not yet, because I'm stronger than the bone. But sometimes it's like Dr. Strangelove. I feel myself fighting the cadaver bone. All right, thanks for having a good sense of humor. Hey, you know, things are funny, and you can laugh. You got to laugh at some mild infirmities. You know, a guy gets in a fight when he's a kid, he gets a tooth knocked out. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. It's a tooth. That's all. That's all. It's only a tooth. It's nothing. It could have been worse. Because I remember when I was a kid, like 18, 15, you know, I never thought I'd live past 40. I really didn't. Come from a family of horrendous male longevity. I don't blame them. It was just the way it is. So my friends and I used to joke. We used to joke when we were kids. We'd look at older men, guys over 30, some of whom were bald. And I remember saying to my friend, and I said, you know what, I'm not worried about baldness because I probably never lived that long. And we used to joke about it. I swear, young guys are funny. We always had a fatalistic view of things. But as time, and there was another story I'll tell you from that era. I remember I told you I had a friend whose father was the tough guy in the whole like thing in the ghetto. All the other guys had little stores or little jobs. This guy owned a bar on the Upper East Side of Manhattan before it was cool. He was a professional bar owner, wearing a suit, not a bartender, a gambler. He was a real, you know, let's say, cool type of guy. But he was a man's man. So naturally, the boys would gravitate to the toughest of the men, because boys will. Boys will always be drawn to the tough guy. I didn't say nasty, I didn't say evil, but the toughest man is usually the tribal leader anyway. So guys liked him. He had a manly way about him. He talked quietly, never spoke loud, hardly spoke at all. And sometimes when the families would get together, in those days, all the families got very often got together on weekends in someone's apartment or house, he would sit down and the guys would listen to him. And remember he said to us, he would say things, he would say, you know, he says, you know, when you hit this certain age, like at 50, and your teeth start to fall out, and your eyes are, you know, not as good as they were. He says, I don't want to live past 50. I hear the guy's 95 now living in Florida. Because the truth is that as you get older, no one wants to die. You keep moving the goalposts. That's the absolute reality. You know, when the time comes, no one's ready. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation 1-800-4? Well, what's the number already? It's like in the middle of the night. Let's take the calls. Boston, the great WRKO. You know, when I say a few station names like WOR, RKO, it's not that the other stations don't impress me. It's just that these are iconic names in radio. Alan in Boston on WRKO. That sounds great, doesn't it? Alan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I just want to say, as far as the ladies are concerned, a wonderful woman, my wife, a few years ago opened up my eyes with the book. It was called The Enemy Within. So I think a lot more women listen to your program than you might think.
Thank you.
One thing that's been kind of bothering me lately, I came back from vacation, and I heard about there was a federal raid on an American company that makes American products.
Obama raided the Fish and Wildlife Service with armed men, went into the Gibson Guitar Company with 40 caliber Glocks on their fat behinds, and looked for in the Gibson Guitar Company to see if they were using endangered species wood.
If there's any company that I think that would be responsible, it would be the furniture makers and the musical instrument makers in the United States, as far as using woods that are certified.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But this is the overreach and the gangsterism of the Obama environmentalists.
Oh, God.
This is why people hate government. This is why people fear government. This is why people would like to see governmental agencies reduced in size. This is why people would like to see federal employees fired. This is why, when they go and break into the Gibson Guitar Company. Of course, Alan, it's terrible. I assume you're in the music business.
I am not, but I, hopefully someday, because I work and because I don't hang out in the bars, I don't do drugs, and I don't solicit prostitutes, one of these days I'd like to save up and get myself a guitar from this company. But, I mean, am I going to be on the list?
No, absolutely. To take an iconic American company like Gibson Guitar Company and send in fat behind guys from the fishing game with 40 caliber Glocks on that. You take a look at their faces in the picture. I had it up on my website last week. These guys are sickening looking. And they're going in and looking to see if the wood comes from an endangered area. I never saw anything like this. Under Obama. Alan, let me send you a copy of Abuse of Power, because if ever there was an abuse of power, it's going on in this government under Obama. You talk about abuse of power. This guy's abusing power every day of his life. Okay? That's really the truth of it. What a title that is. It's actually a great title. It really is. It truly is a terrific title. New York, WOR, another iconic name. Love it. Joe in New York on WOR. What's on your mind, Joe?
Well, Dr. Savage, first of all, before I get into the conversation about what happened over in Afghanistan, I think two good actors that could probably play you in the role, all right, of your upcoming book would be, first, Bruce Willis I think he's pretty
much... He's too old. He's too old because my character is in his 40s. Jack Hatfield is an action thriller guy. He's in his 40s. He can't be that old. Bruce Willis is already is past that point.
Because I was also going to throw in either Steven Seagal or Chuck Norris, but then again...
They're way past. They're way past their prime. I would say Kiefer Sutherland would be perfect for it. It's like 24 on steroids.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, in case you missed this the other day, you're not going to miss it now. Welcome to the Michael Savage Show. By calling government a family, Obama has hit a new low. As you know, the media overhyped Hurricane Irene, and so did the Obama White House, hoping to make the president look like a hero. As part of the hype, government talking heads went on TV assuring Americans that FEMA and all aspects of the federal family were working as one. I found that talk less than reassuring. This is the new low for Obama. They're now changing the word government to family. That's what Napolitano and Carney are calling it now, the federal family. We know about news speak from books about propaganda, but under Obama, it's taken on a new meaning. Now, why do you suppose they dropped the word government? Because they know you hate government. You understand that government is largely a band of crooks. Now, the last family I heard about was the Sopranos. Before that, I remember the Corleones and the Godfather. But now, under Obama, we have a new family called federal. Do you feel safer now? You shouldn't. You should be terrified. Just think of the federales in Mexico. Well, that's it under Obama. 1-800-449-8255. And in only a few days now, my novel Abuse of Power is coming out. I'm not going to read it to you, but I got to tell you one review. There is never a dull moment in the story. It's like the series 24 on steroids. You want to read the entire book? You can't. But you can download a chapter for free on michaelsavage.com. Also in the news is black Muslim representative Andre Carson, Demon Cat of Indiana, who said that the Tea Party wants blacks hanging on a tree. Really? What's more reassuring is that this superb individual, Andre Carson, the black Muslim rep from Indiana, who says that Tea Party protesters are one of the largest threats to our internal security, is actually on the Homeland Security Committee. Isn't it nice to know that a black Muslim who thinks that white people want to hang blacks on a tree are now working for Department of Homeland Security? Well, Carson and his remarks, well, this comes on the heels of Maxine Waters saying the Tea Party can go to hell, and Sheila Jackson Lee saying the current environment is worse than Jim Crow days. I'm asking you a question. Are Obama's allies deliberately trying to create racial strife in order to help Obama get reelected? What's the most racist thing you've heard one of Obama's allies say in the last month? Representative Alan West, Republican of Florida, although he's African American, says he's thinking of leaving the black congressional caucus. Do you think he should do it? Don't you find the idea of a black congressional caucus intrinsically troubling? As we approach the 10th anniversary of 9/11, what do you think the most important thing is that Americans have forgotten since that day? Also, black farmers in South Africa are actually selling their farms back to white farmers. Has the redistribution of land in South Africa failed? Well, of course it has. What can America learn from this? Well, I think you can pretty much fill in the blanks. 1 800 888-449-8255 is the phone number. And now to michaelsavage.com per se, top right. Black Muslim representative says Tea Party wants blacks hanging from a tree. Fight breaks out at New York Park over Muslim headscarves. Baseball hats are banned. Any other headgear is banned. But when it comes to Muslims, well, they want special privileges. They don't care that their scarves could get caught in a ride. It doesn't matter to them. It's their right to wear a headscarf. Obama to media tells the media people to stop calling Al-Qaeda Al-Qaeda. Yeah, come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. U.S. partners with foreign governments to protect illegals. Panel says $60 billion wasted in the United States on wars. Tripoli and Libya is divided as rebels jostle to fill power vacuum. Obama policy could benefit illegal alien uncle. He might be allowed to stay in the U.S. under de facto amnesty because although he was caught drunk driving, he's the kind of immigrant that Obama needs. After all, he's an entitlement nut. Tony Blair's sister-in-law incites Muslims to hate Jews, hate Israel, and to liberate Jerusalem. I told you many of the royal family are pro-Muslim, which is why I was banned in Britain. But you don't believe me yet, huh? Obama has tour buses flown into stump speeches. He rode the buses for only a couple of miles at a time. But it's very green of him. Approval of Obama at all-time low. Well, it's a long time from the election, and the federal family has not yet gotten to work. Mel Gibson gets off easy from singer's claims. Last year, he was willing to pay this gold digger $15 million in settlement money, but apparently her lawyers blew it because they just settled for $750,000, not $15 million. Have to ask yourself a question. What did Gibson's lawyers find on the so-called Russian singer? Guess we'll never know. Finally, on MichaelSavage.com, why did they dump Jerry Lewis from the telethon? And is Michelle our Imelda Marcos? It's on MichaelSavage.com. It's surreal. 1-800-449-8255. All this and more on MichaelSavage.com and on the radio show today. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Way to begin this story other than to tell you I was on my bicycle before the show in one of my moods. I go in and out of moods and grousing about it. I just read that there was a Russian in New York who bought a $150 million apartment, so I started to get mad, grousing about that, saying I don't understand this world I'm living in. There are guys coming back from Iraq without legs and arms, and this guy has enough money to buy another $150 million apartment. Well, something's wrong with the picture here. So I said, look, I have a choice right now. I could sit here getting angry, or I'd get on my bicycle and take a 10-minute ride, because I remember that many years ago, 20 years ago, I read a couple of self-help books. And one of them said that in the few minutes that you're sitting there grousing about how bad things are, you can send a letter, make a phone call, run around the block. And you know what? It helped me then, and it helps me now. So I got on the bike, and I went down to a kind of isolated area where they're building some new houses by the water, because I love to watch houses under construction. It's very optimistic. To see the wood and the contractors and the this and the that. And I'm out by the point, and I'm coming back, and I see this big, black, Great Dane off a leash. Now, I happen to be afraid of big black dogs. In fact, big white dogs. In fact, big dogs generally frighten me because I was bitten when I was young, right down to the bone, and had to be hospitalized. So I have a real respect for dogs. So I said, now I got to be very careful as I go by this Great Dane. I don't know whose it is. If I let out anger inside of me, the dog's going to feel it. If I let out fear, the dog's going to fear it.
So I said, just be cool and go. Don't go too fast. Don't go. So I go by. The dog doesn't bother me. I said, thank God for that. Then I come upon a guy who's got a truck who's doing auto detailing. And he's a big black guy. I've seen him once in a while. Huge. I mean, like a football-sized guy. And he comes out of the truck and he says to me, you're looking good. And I said, what? He said, you lose some weight? And we start to talk. I didn't know the guy. I've seen him around. But he thought he knew me. He said he knew me. Not thought. He knew me for a number of years. He's been around this county doing cars. He's a great guy. I'm going to tell you the story now, where it goes. So one thing leads to another. And he says to me, you remind me of another radio guy I knew. He says, this guy was as smooth as can be. He could walk the ghetto and he could walk the White House. So I said, you know, let me tell you something. I said, David, I grew up in New York City and I had to learn how to swim with all kinds of fish. New York City was a very big fish tank. And if you didn't learn how to swim the right way, they'd tear your fins off. And he laughed. He says, well, they wouldn't just tear your fins off. He says, they'd eat you for breakfast. And we started to talk. Now, he grew up in a black ghetto here in Marin County. There is one, and it was called Marin City. It's an interesting story unto itself. The housing was built by the magnate, Kaiser. When they were building Liberty ships in World War II, they needed to bring in workers, and they didn't bring them in from Mexico. They brought workers in from the South, and they were largely black people, and they built housing for them. And you may not know it, but many of the ship workers, you know about Rosie the Riveter, of course, but you didn't know that most of the Liberty ships were built by black people, particularly out here in Sausalito at the Kaiser shipyards. So the housing was built nearby, and it's become basically, largely a black community. And naturally, the way things have evolved in our society, and blame whoever you want, it hasn't been a picnic for the people living in there. So we were walking around, and we were just standing there talking about the dog and the this and the that. So I said, well, how did you come through that place and come out the way you are? You see, he's a pastor. In addition to running a service that, you know, polishes cars, he happens to be a minister. His name is Pastor David Hall. And I'm going to tell you more about that in a few minutes and where this went, how that went there, and how positive this man was. And we were laughing. He says, you know, I know people around here, very rich people. He says, their children can't play with anybody. I said, why? He said, well, I told him the reason your kid can't play with anyone is because you've given them everything. They got all these toys. They sit in the house. They play electronic toys. They don't know how to play with anybody. I said, isn't that a shame? And I told him that I'm a people person, that I'm not really alone, or I don't really like to be alone. But I figured if I got out on the bike, I said I'd run into somebody to talk to. And I said, sure enough, this was like hitting, you know, the triple lottery for me in terms of the kind of person I am. It's like all four cherries came up on that big, slot machine in the sky of humanity. And this goes back to what I told you a story years ago about me and Brother Billy down in Harlem when I was a kid. But that's a whole separate story. But this is going to lead somewhere else. So we're talking and this and that. We look up a hill where they're building the houses above where he's polishing the cars. And he says, when I was a kid, he said, you know what we used to do for fun? I said, what? He said, we'd slide down the hill on like linoleum. I said, I can't believe it. I said, we did the same thing. I said, I lived in a tenement on a block called Longfellow Avenue in the Bronx. And above me was a hill called Bryan Avenue. Between us was a big empty woodlot that had a huge hill on it that was denuded of foliage. And we'd slide down in an oilcloth, you know, old linoleum. And I said, well, we'd also play war. He said, how'd that work? I said, well, we'd take the garbage can covers, we'd put them in our hands, and there'd be like a gang of us. I'm talking kids 5, 6, 7 years old. No one had guns or knives. And the game was to run up the hill against the other street as they were raining ash down upon us. And like gladiator, bounce, bounce, bing, bing. And I said, my head would get split open 100 times in these things. I always had a knack. I don't know where the ash guys, you know what the ash is from? He says, no. I said, well, in those days, I said, they had garbage that they would burn in incinerators. And the leftover of that burn was like a volcanic ash. You know, thank God they don't do it anymore. And I said, these kids would get the ash out of the incinerator and rain it down upon us. And you'd have to fend it off. You can go home, you can get killed. So I said, many a time I'd come home with my head bleeding, with blood running down my head. I'd come home, my mother would faint before I got through the door. She was like a panic case. She'd go, oh, my God, and she'd fall on the floor basically screaming and yelling, I'm bleeding, and she's doing nothing. But I said, next door, I had an aunt who was like stoic, like Russian aunt. Nothing fazed this woman. She'd look at me with the sober face, get out the peroxide and bandage it up, and that was it. So he lit up. David did, and he says, when are you going to write that book? I was like, bung. I said, what? He said, when are you going to write that book? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, all those stories of your youth, he says, those are great stories. Well, we talked about so many different things. He says, I got to tell you, I grew up on welfare. He says, my father left us when I was five. He says, I'm one of six children. And he says, yeah, I ate the government cheese. He says with a big smile. He says, yeah, I grew up on the government cheese. And he says, I'd say to my mother, he says, Mom, if there's a God, why am I hungry? Now I said, oh, God, what a question. I said, kids are so smart. I said, they're brilliant. And he said, my mother told me, never be bitter, never be angry, always have faith. Now, this is the most important part of the story, is the faith that this man had. He didn't turn to bitterness. He didn't turn to anger. He didn't hate Whitey. He didn't hate America. He just did what he did, and he did it, and he did it, and he did it. And you know what? He's the richest man I've met in recent years. He is the wealthiest man I have ever met in the last 10 years. And I've met people with a lot of money. And I said, you know, you remind me of the story that Tolstoy wrote, The Kingdom of God is Within. I said, because you do emanate the goodness. He said, well, Michael, if you don't give anything back, you're going to be empty inside. And this man lives to give because he said in giving he gets love. Now, if this is not the epitome of what the Christian religion today is all about, I'd like to know what is. And so I guess the moral of the story is that the humanity in the other man can never be known until you have a contact with the other man. And, oh, I remember what a particular story before I go to the next spot got to him. I said, let me tell you a story. My dad owned a little store. And he had started on the streets of New York with a push cart. He came from the gutter. He was an immigrant with nothing. And he never really became a wealthy man. I said, but he had a little stall inside a store. And he sold first used things. Then he sold some antique things. And he always made a living. We had a house and always food on the table. And I said, well, one day, I said, it was all white people in there. I said, never did you see anyone but white people in that market. Now, remember who I'm talking to now. I'm talking to a stranger who happens to be a black man, who happens to be, like you talk about fullback football team, huge man, and we're just looking at each other and talking. So I said, it's an all-white store. In comes a black man, well-dressed. And I said, he says to my dad, how much is that? My father says, oh, a certain amount of money. How much is that? He's pointing at different statues. All right, how much is that? How much? He says, I'll take them all. So now the man leaves, writes him a check, and my father pulls me over, and he says, I want to tell you something, Michael. He says, listen to what just happened in this store because it's a lesson you're going to learn for the rest of your life. I said, what's that? He says, never judge a man by the color of his skin. He said, you never know who the man is, you never know what the man is, and you never know what that man's all about until you have an interaction with him. So when I told it to a pastor, Pastor Hall, he says, that is a beautiful story. He says, you've got to tell that story. And so I've just told that story.
Savage.
You know what I think of the Real Housewives television series? I think that they're all garbage, gutter snipes. Well, recently there's been a few suicides related to these despicable fake series. And to talk about this is A.G. Gankarski, who writes for the American Conservative and the Washington Times. Mr. Gankarski, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. It's great talking to you today.
Who is this producer, Andy Cohen, and explain why what he is doing is so damaging to the American cultural psyche?
Michael, Andy Cohen is an executive at the Bravo Network, and Bravo is probably the nation's leading repository of programs for fashion-conscious people at this point. A lot of shows on there, Millionaire Matchmaker, which is an interesting show, and also Andy Cohen's Real Housewives series. He's got 7 or 8 Real Housewives shows all over the country, Atlanta, Beverly Hills, New York, New Jersey. There was one in D.C. for one season. But that ended. And Andy Cohen basically has built an empire leveraged on the idea that people want this exploitative type of entertainment that he provides. And it's pretty interesting how successful the formula has been and how successful it will continue to be, despite replacement of some of the component parts and some of the major players on the shows. The shows keep going. It's pretty remarkable.
Well, why do you think television shows such as Real Housewives and their portrayal of gender roles is so damaging to America?
Well, a lot of reasons. You know, the thing to keep in mind is when America's been the most successful, it's been the traditional family, with the father and the mother and the kids being raised. But in The Real Housewives, what's so ironic is many of these women are actually divorcees. They're recently divorced, or like Camille Grammer on the Beverly Hills show not too long ago going through a divorce as the show progresses. So, you know, what's projected in the construct of the housewife is not a housewife at all. She's not in the home. She's not actually married. So that's one reason it's damaging. Another reason is that there's so much materialism in the show. These people measure themselves by what they can buy or where they can afford to live or how much they're spending on their collection of wigs or what have you. They measure themselves by title, as the Countess in one of these shows did. So, again, it's not wholesome values. It's not a wholesome construct. What it is, in fact, is kind of like Hieronymus Bosch painting. These people aren't producers at all. They're, you know, parasites, basically living off of the fame and glory of the people who made the mistakes of marrying them, turning them into the housewives, which, you know, as I said, is actually a fictional construct when it comes down to it.
You say this is a symptom of the Obama administration? Explain this, would you?
Well, you know, what I mean by that is that in the Obama administration, we see these values writ large. You see the vacations are constantly going on, Martha's Vineyard, his and her jets, all of that. So you have that division in the home. You didn't see, say, you know, Laura and George W. going on separate vacations. You didn't see the senior Bushes or the Reagans going on separate vacations. That's something that the Obama administration does because they're inflicted that celebrity toxin that, you know, seems to say, all right, we're going to live large. We're going to amass collections of things. And you kind of get this conspicuous consumption and sort of a nouveau riche concept with real generationally rich people. They aren't so ostentatious in how they consume. So, you know, it's really that kind of thing. And also another thing to consider is that without the monetary policies pursued by the Obama administration, the Bernanke policies, you wouldn't see this kind of conspicuous consumption either. It's so much of it's credit driven. I mean, we've seen how the guy in Beverly Hills just recently, you know, killed himself because of debts and because he felt, you know, pressures from the show. He was apparently telling confidants that the show killed him. This is, you know, this show is a product of our times, and our times are very definitely Obama-centric.
Well, isn't this really the free market at work? It really is.
Well, taking advantage of the free market, it's not that he's taking advantage of the free market. What Andy Cohen is doing regarding the free market is exploiting a fissure in it. There are lonely people, there are sad people, there are depressed people, there are people who don't like their lots and lives, and those people are the target audiences for a Real Housewives series, the target audience for that sort of ostentatious, conspicuous consumption I described earlier. They need that type of external validation because they come from family structures and work structures and religious structures that aren't satisfying. So they need these televisual icons, and never mind that the icons represent nothing. So, you know, for those who say that it's just a free market at work, yes, the free market in some ways is amoral. The free market will give you outcomes that you don't necessarily want. I respect his ability to make money, but what I don't respect is the product he puts out there, which I believe is corrosive filth.
Isn't this just the culmination of 40 years of degenerate television?
Well, I mean, we've seen, if we go back and look at 40 years of television, you can see things like Love American Style and Three's Company, and they were thought to be risque in their time, but if you look at them now, they look relatively harmless compared to this stuff. I mean, what you see on The Real Housewives, what you see on so many of these reality shows is just an absolutely subjective morality, where you'll see people swapping mates, people going out and doing scandalous things. They want the camera on them. They don't want to be role models. It's like Charles Barkley said a few years back, I'm not your role model. What these people do is, and they not only say that, okay, we do things a bit scandalously, but we want you to see it. We want it syndicated. We want to live large off of this. They're celebrities for the sake of being celebrity. And, you know, it's a shame, it's an indictment on American culture that this is what we tolerate for entertainment.
Recently, there have been a few suicides in the Real Housewives series. What do they have to do with the show itself?
The Real House husband who killed himself, Taylor's husband, in the Beverly Hills show, he said that the show killed him. He amassed debts. He had filed bankruptcy a few years back. He was headed toward bankruptcy again. And what Andy Cohen and the gang did over at Bravo, they delayed the launch of the new show a couple of weeks to get beyond the funeral. And undoubtedly, they're going to incorporate all kinds of footage from this funeral and the aftermath as part of the show. So, you know, the show, in fact, killed him and, in fact, is profiting from his death. It's quite the double whammy.
A.G. Gennarski, thanks for joining us today with your brilliant insights on the Savage Nation.
It was great speaking with you, Michael. I look forward to you reading more of my work in the American Conservative at amconmag.com.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Want the president to use the bully pulpit. I want him to get Chase Manhattan and Jamie Dimon and Wells Fargo and Citi and Bank of America. I want those CEOs around the table. I want the president to look them in the eye, and I want to have him tell them they've got to be a part of strengthening this economy. They owe it to the people. The citizens bailed them out. That was citizens' taxpayers' money that bailed them out. Now that they've been bailed out, they're making profits, and they're not putting that money back into the community, either in mortgages or investments in small business. It's time for the president to get very tough with it.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com. 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. All right, let's move on. Normally, I don't usually take a long vacation. I take a week. But you know, this year, I am so burned out. I'm so tired from it all. I'm thinking of just, I don't know where to go, though. I maybe Fiji again. Tavayuni, I'm thinking of going back, because I was there from 69 off and on for many, many years collecting plants, long before Fiji became a real tourist destination. I was there when it was still a colony. God, I'm getting old. I can't believe I got off the ship, the Oriana, in June of 1969, I think, or July, September of 1969. And Fiji was still a colony. I can't believe it. It was the last year of being a British colony. What year is this? It's like, what is going on, Ichabod Crane? That's like a lifetime, you know? By cracky, I'm like Methuselah here on the radio. I don't know if I want to go back, because I think that there won't even be a country I'll recognize at all down there. And it's, you know, it's a big tourist destination now. It's like a Hawaii, like a would-be Hawaii. They take brave, bold, muscular men who should be hunting and have them serve drinks to weaklings from America and Australia. There's something that nauseates me about that, to see muscular Fijian men with a flower in their hair serving a drink to a weakling from Australia or America, sitting with a pasty body by the pool. Something about it in me rebels against it. I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm a Westerner. I understand. I'm not a big muscular guy. But I don't know. There's something in me. There's still a part of me that doesn't like it. When they say, you know, Nissan Bula, and the guy crouches down to give some warthog a Mai Tai. There's something wrong with that picture. It's like white mischief to me. Oh, boy, oh, boy. That's the problem with having a kaleidoscopic mind. That's the problem. It's also the problem with being a logical mind. See, the problem with Western civilization is this, is that when you have reason, there's always a counterpoint to your reason. So people who don't have reason will always win. And that's why we're losing, because the radical Islamists don't have reason. They say, this is the way. Anyone who disagrees with it is an infidel. You're going to die. We say, won't you reason with us? They don't even know what you're talking about, because there's no reason in their thought structure. And that's why we're going to lose unless we become more unreasonable than them. Iran is the nest, is the spider's nest behind it all. Everybody knows that. But it won't happen. I'm only a talk show host, so it doesn't matter anyway. So that's why I say it's time to go away. Some days I get up. You know what I want to do?
I want to leave radio, disappear, change my name, move to an island somewhere and never be heard from again. Turn off the radio, turn off the television, and never, ever look at the news and say, well, you know, when I'm an old man, if someone comes here with a headscarf and a scimitar, I'll know that we lost. And when I'm a very old man, if someone doesn't come here with a headscarf and a scimitar, I'll know that we won. Until that time, leave me alone. I'd rather drink Yangona, you know, and beer, and that's the end of the story. Go out like Robinson Crusoe. Not worry about going to a dermatologist every time I get a scab on my head. I never heard of anything like the society I live in. A bunch, every time, oh, look at that, I was in the sun, I got a scab. They cut you open on the head because you got a little scab. Everything you're supposed to go to the doctor for. There's a lot to be said for just getting old and dying, you know, also. I could see why a lot of the old-timers went out that way. They did. They didn't like the whole scene. You're going to get butchered in the end. All they do is cut you up and leave you like a hamburger and take out a couple of hundred grand from your family, from the 20% that your insurance doesn't cover. I went to the doctor the other day. He says to me, what kind of country do we live in that Russians come here? They have to only wait 5 years. He said they get gold-plated medical treatment, unlike anything Uncle Joe Stalin promised them in Russia. He said, while union workers in this country, average workers in this country, can't get their teeth fixed, can't get a prescription drug filled, he said, what kind of country do we live in? I won't tell you the doctor's name, but he's an American. I said, welcome to America where the streets are paved with yolds. KNEW, San Francisco, Anthony, next topic, please.
Cook Islands. That's where you want to go.
I was in the Cook Islands. I was in Palmyra. I was in the Cook Islands. So how long has it been since you've been there?
I go there. I try to go there every year.
Where do you go? What part of the Cooks do you go to?
I go to Aitutaki. Atu is where my wife's from. There's only about 400 people on that island. And Tonga.
Have you ever been to Palmyra?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. Well, look, they're pretty remote, those islands. People don't even know what remote is until they've set foot in one of those atolls where there's an entire community of individuals who have been living there since God created the earth. It's hard to imagine what it's like. Even though they're westernized to a certain extent, you can still get the vibe off the ancient, can't you?
Oh, the caves there in Atu, it's incredible there. I would strongly suggest revisiting that place again because it hasn't changed much.
Yeah, well, you know, in Rarotonga, when I first went there, what's the dance that they do where the women shake their bodies and they go, that called?
Asian. My wife's an actual dancer, too.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? An amazing culture. So where did you meet your wife?
I met her here in Marin County, unfortunately.
I'm sorry, that's funny. What, she came as a dancer and you stole her heart?
No, it's a longer story than that. I'm sure you don't have time for it all, but we hooked up in a great way, and I just couldn't let her go.
Isn't that beautiful? That's a beautiful story. So do you have children yet?
Yeah, I have one named Rockanui and another one Giovanni. I just had another second son.
And where are you raising the children, Anthony?
I'm doing my best to raise them in Marin County. I've been here my whole life. I went through all the Democratic stuff. My father's very politically active here. He was a Marin County supervisor for 25 years and made a lot of big changes for the right reasons here. But I'll tell you, man, it's hard to survive over here with all these bumper stickers.
It's frightening. No, the county has been completely mentally polluted by Barbara Boxer. She has warped the mind of Marin County. This used to be a Republican-conservative stronghold, this county across the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. But since she came out, she spread the virus of liberalism, and it's now metastasized.
You know, there was a time where...
Well, wait, hold on a minute. But raising the children, this is a very important question, Anthony. Let me go into it with you, because it applies to all people who love America, across America, young people who are having children who are bewildered. You can raise a child the right way, even in a liberal community. And you don't have to become fanatically religious to do so either. There is a way to do it. You know, you can survive, you can swim with these comedians and still turn out a child of substance.
And I plan on raising them the right way.
Well, look, let me explain two things from my point of view, and I'm certainly you're a strong man, obviously, who's going to do it your way. If you teach your children the culture of your own culture, it's probably a European-American heritage, I would assume, and then the culture of your wife of Pacific Islander, you teach them the essence of what that means, borders, language, and culture, and how those people survive for thousands of years on their own, with their own language, with their own culture, with their own borders, meaning the borders of their island, and how that applies to America, your child will find his way or her way in this country at the end of the day.
One of the reasons that we make sure we all go back there, that the, so they're linked to that culture as well. I think it's
yeah,
so important.
Well,
that,
well, you're a lucky man. Obviously, you have a strength of mind, and that's why your children will turn out fine. Now, you're going to send them where, to Redwood High School?
Well, I went to Drake, so, you know, they'll probably end up at Drake.
Guess what? Guess what? You can send your child to a very liberal school where drugs are rampant, and they could come out without having used drugs and still have a spine. It can be done. You mustn't let the liberal virus drive the good people out. You mustn't. You must try to save just save your own child, and by doing so, you may save the school and the county. Thanks for the call. I don't think I'm going to go to the Cook Islands. Do we have any Cook Island music? That is such great music. When I first heard it in 1970 in the islands, it was like with the drums. They use sticks on wood. God, I'd love to dig some of that music up. I have some old tapes that are so great. I got to dig them out of the archives. Anybody have Cook Island music they could play in the background, or Tahitian, the old Tahitian music? What am I talking about? You don't even know what I'm talking about. Hey, I don't have to do politics. I could just do radio. I can tell you a story. You want me to tell stories about the South Pacific, plant collecting, circa 1969 through X? Why, I can remember, I've been through hurricanes, tornadoes, and typhoons. I was on a ship between Tahiti and Fiji in a Force 10 storm. We thought that steel ship would go down, but by cracky, she didn't. It's 100% true. Did I tell you about the German captain on that ship? I was simply a lecturer. For a long while, you see, I got free passage on cruise ships as a lecturer because I had been an anthropologist. I had some good slides. Slides, hello, color slides, lantern slides. Sounds like Charles Darwin. No one uses them anymore. I mean, taken with the old Nikon F with an actual light meter. Some of the most beautiful pictures I've ever seen I took. I mean, of the islands, because I really knew lighting and I had a great camera, the old Nikon F with the light meter. I talked my way into various cruise lines, and they would offer us a free first-class passage. I believe that the children would learn more in a month away at sea and visiting the islands and seeing, you know, people of means that they'd meet on the ships when ship travel still had a little dignity than they would sitting in a school on a wooden chair listening to a stuffy lecture about the wonders of hedonism.
Savage.